Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navaditamastama Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, page 60. The demigods must offer worship in obedience to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But one might argue that since the Supreme Personality of the Supreme Godhead was within the womb of Devaki, he was also coming in a material body. Why then should he be worshipped? Why should one make a distinction between an ordinary living entity and the Supreme Personality of Godhead? These questions are answered in the following verses. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out, right, so we see this thing where the next verse that's coming up and that, and there's something that may come up from this, a doubt may arise from this, the next one, then they make a sangati between the two. So we see that Vishwanath is doing that. We see that Baladeva is doing that in Govinda Bhashya, like that. So here, Prabhupada also does the same. That's the same principle. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that the Lord, when asked, then asks a question. If I, endowed with body, sense, and dhamma, am satya, then is the material world asatya? The demigods answer, the world is true, but subject to destruction in time. Whereas you are not destructible by time, you are indestructible. With this intention, they recite this verse. The demigods continued. Right, so then you hear Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he points out that, okay, he's sat, but does that mean the material world is then untruth? Because that's what the impersonalists will say. They'll say that Brahman is truth and the material world is illusion. So that's their position that they're trying to establish. So then Krishna asks, so is that true like that? The demigods continued. The body, the total body and the individual body are of the same composition. Oh, the body may figuratively be called the original tree. From this tree, which fully depends on the ground of material nature, come two kinds of fruit, the enjoyment of happiness and the suffering of distress. The cause of the tree forming its three roots is associated with the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. The fruits of bodily happiness have four tastes, religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. Footnote 20. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, according to the different associations in the three modes of material nature, the living entities are tasting different kinds of religiosity, different kinds of economic development, different kinds of sense gratification, and different kinds of liberation. Practically all material work is performed in ignorance, but because there are three qualities, sometimes the quality of ignorance is covered with goodness or passion, right? Because the material existence is ignorance. Then there's this covering of these others just to add a little something to it. Right? Okay. These are experienced through five senses for acquiring knowledge in the midst of six circumstances. Right. So, in other words, the fruits of the tree, right, which is based on goodness, passion, ignorance, then are of these four kinds, right, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Then those four will have different flavors according to what modes they're in. These will be appreciated through the six senses, because otherwise, how do you contact? Right, the material world you contact through the senses, through the mind. So that will then be done in that way. So someone has more of one, more of the other, a combination, like that. Six circumstances, okay, lamentation, illusion, old age, death, hunger, and thirst. Right? So these are the situations through which we view the world. Right? You know, I'm hungry, I'm thirsty, I'm dead. I'm in illusion, I'm lamenting, you know, or I'm old, right? You know, like that. Okay. The seven layers of bark covering the tree are skin, blood, muscle, fat, bone, marrow, and semen. And the eight branches of the tree are the five gross and three subtle elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Right? Because those all give different tastes. Right? So if you're working with earth, it gives one taste, with water, another, fire, another, like that. The tree of the body has nine hollows: the eyes, the ears, the nostrils, the mouth, the rectum, and the genitals, and 10 leaves, the 10 airs passing through the body. In this tree of the body, there are two birds. One is the individual soul, and the other is the super soul. Srila Prabhupada comments. The material world is composed of five principal elements: earth, water, fire, air, and ether, all of which are emanations from Krishna. Although materialistic scientists may accept these five primary elements as the cause of the material manifestation, these elements in their gross and subtle states are produced by Krishna, whose marginal potency also produces the living entities working within this material world. The seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita clearly states that the entire cosmic manifestation is a combination of two of Krishna's energy, the superior energy and the inferior energy. The living entities are the superior energy, and the inanimate material elements are the inferior energy. In the dormant stage, everything rests in Krishna. Yeah. So just as his material energy produces the material world, so the marginal potency produces the living entities. Material scientists cannot give such a thorough analysis of the material structure of the body. The analysis of the material scientist concerns itself only with inanimate matter, but this is inadequate because the living entity is completely separate from the material bodily structure, right? Because what was mentioned here, we hear that all the time, but scientists don't even understand all this. They don't know the 10 airs, they don't know how the modes of nature are working, what everyone's working for, the situations they're in, all these different things. They actually can't put all that together. Different parts may be studied by different disciplines, but the point is, in the Vedic, it's all part of one thing. Right? So they can't explain. And we'll take this as just the basic. Then you can get the detail of each one of these. Right? Okay, the analysis of the material sciences concerns itself only with inanimate matter. But this is inadequate because the living entity is completely separate from the material bodily structure. In Bhagavad Gita 7.5, the Lord says, Aparayam itas tvanyam prakritim vidhi me param jiva bhutam mahabaho yayedam dharyate jagata. Besides this inferior nature, O mighty armed Arjuna, there is the superior energy of mind, which consists of all the living entities who are struggling with material nature and are sustaining the universe. Although the material elements emanate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, they are separate elements and are sustained by the living elements. So you have this aspect of this double aspect. So you have the mechanics of the body, the mechanics of the material energy. Then you have the living entity themselves, and then what they're going through. Right? Does that make sense? Because the two go together. That there's situations in which you are tasting things, right? There's the philosophy that this is what should be done, but then there's the tradition on how it's done, and then what taste is gained there. So there's both the understanding of it and the taste gained from it. The two go together. They're not separate. So that's, I mean, everything's based on the Veda. Then you have the Smriti, which is tradition. Then you have the instruction of the acharyas and leading personalities. Then you have how we fit into it. So that has to be seen as a complete thing. If we start from ourselves, then we'll start to adjust things without tradition. Right? So there has to be tradition. I don't understand the spiritual master, so I'll change things. No, that's based on tradition. So there's a tradition. We try to follow that. Then we see the two go together. Because that's the whole point. That's what it's saying. The modern science separates these two. right? This one verse wouldn't be used in like this way. It would be studied as two separate things. There'd be the physics aspect, and then there might be the chemical, there might be the psychological, like that. They say it is two different disciplines. These things shouldn't be studied together, you know, like we were discussing this morning. Right? They don't go together. It means you have the science here and things like that, and then there's the personality and all that. So all this happening is that the influence of the modern academy, then it gives that influence, and then people can't understand things. But they go together. The point is, material world's here because there's living entities. Living entities are here because they don't understand the spiritual world. So they can't understand the animate, so they're given the inanimate, but they're still animate. That's the problem. So this the inability to put two together, that there's Krishna and his creation, and the two go together. No, I want to study Krishna is one thing, his creation is another. So that's what the material world is. I see what's going on here and how that works, and then I see something else, so I can't see the two together. So that's not actually an intellectual qualification. That's actually a defect. So
Maharaj, is it that the Mayavadis that say they deny the existence of the spiritual world, that's why they are based on what we call Maya creation, is they deny the existence of the eternal world?
Yes.
This is the base of their...
Yes. Well, the base is that material has, you know, name, form, shape, qualities, you know, results, experiences, and then because the experience is bad, and we're looking to be happy, so the material, because of it's temporary, and we're looking for eternal, therefore, the material has all these qualities, so the opposite, the spiritual, can't have any of these qualities. So there can't be variety, there can't be anything. That's the basis. So their basis is not on the spiritual world's not there. Their basis is that the material, the spiritual, is the opposite of material. That's their philosophy. So, therefore, it can't have any standing because, according to their philosophy, the material world's illusion, then that means then a philosophy based on illusion also has to be illusion. Right? If I take clay and make something out of clay, it's clay. So if I take illusion and then make something out of it, it's still illusion. So that's why the question came up, is it real or not? And he says, no, it's real. The world is true. But it's temporary. Its trueness is because its basis in the Lord. So it's his energies, and it's acting according to his direction. What's false is our idea that this place is a place we can be happy. So the Mayavadis, they're under the same illusion that I want to be happy here, I can't, so therefore the spiritual, the Brahman is where I'll be happy. But they don't catch us that, no, you can't be happy in the material world. It's just the way it's made.
Then from where arises the point that there is no God, there is no absolute single entity in their philosophy?
No, there is only a single entity. Brahman is the singular entity. There is no other entity. So the individual, the Mayavadi that's discussing the philosophy, according to his philosophy, doesn't exist. So if he doesn't exist, then that means an illusion. Then for him to be talking is also illusion. So why is he talking? So in other words, if Mayavadis really wanted to follow their philosophy, they'd stop talking. Because they don't exist anyway. It doesn't matter. Okay, besides this inferior nature, O mighty Arjuna, there's a superior nature of mind which consists of all the living entities who are struggling with material nature and are sustaining the universe. Right? It means it's just like, let's say, the crib. I don't mean the crib. I mean, you know, the thing babies go in. Right? How long do you keep the crib in the house? As long as the baby fits into the crib. Okay, so that's the meaning of the living entities are sustaining the universe. Means the material energy is manifest as long as there's living entities to be in the material energy. but it's not that they're in control of it. Like that, because, you know, according to Vedanta Sutra, this wouldn't match. Do they actually sustain the universe? No, but they sustain that it's there. Right? Does that make sense? That's the meaning. Although the material elements emanate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, they are separated elements and are sustained by the living elements. When two birds enter a tree, one may foolishly think that the birds become one or merge with the tree. But actually they do not. Rather, each bird keeps its individual identity. Similarly, the individual soul and the supersoul do not become one, nor do they merge with matter. The living entity lives close to matter, but this does not mean that he merges or mixes with it. Asango hyayam purushaha. Although material scientists mistakenly see the organic and inorganic, or animate and inanimate, to be mixed. But no, they're not. So that's what impersonal. So you have the body, you have the Lord, and you have the living entity. They're always individuals. They always will be. Always have been. That's the important. Like here, one may foolishly think, like a flock of birds go into a tree, now do they become the tree? You know, because they come to the tree, now the tree starts chirping? You know, like that? You know. Yeah. Vedic knowledge has been kept, imprisoned, or concealed. But every human being needs to understand it in truth. The modern civilization of ignorance is simply engaged in analyzing the body, and thus people come to the erroneous conclusion that the living force within the body is generated under certain material conditions. People have, and they don't even understand those. Right? I say. That the living force within the body is generated under certain material conditions. People have no information of the soul, but this verse gives the perfect explanation that there are two living forces, dvikaga, the individual soul and the supersoul. The supersoul is present in everybody, Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridde sher junatishtati, Bhagavad Gita 18:61. Whereas the individual soul is situated only in his own body, dehi, and is transmigrating from one body to another. The demigods continued. The efficient cause of this material world, manifested with its many varieties as the original tree, is you, O Lord. You are also the maintainer of this material world, and after annihilation, you are the one in whom everything is conserved. Those who are covered by your external energy cannot see you behind this manifestation, but theirs is not the vision of learned devotees. Right? Just because they don't see doesn't mean that that is actually the elevated vision. Right, so these learned devotees, they can see it in its proper condition, but others, they tend to not. Srila Prabhupada comments. Right, so also here it says, you are the one in whom everything is conserved. So it's not that it enters into him and disappears. It means that that energy is still there, it's still potent. And then it'll manifest again, and then we'll see again. Right? So it's not like he manifests a new material energy. That's the same energy.
Even the scientists have this concept of the law of conservation of energy. That's true.
Yes. So it's not that they don't catch a few things. It's that their conclusion is wrong. They analyze the body. It's not that the body doesn't exist. It's just they don't see the nature of the soul and the connection. That's the difficulty. Yes.
So when the material goes inside the body of Vishnu, then the external manifestation of his nature, means Mahamaya, she stays in the form of Yogamaya outside of him. Is that correct?
I would say both are going on. Because the point is his energy is he is his energy. So she'll be inside and outside. But when the material energy winds up, then you won't see that manifestation of the external potency. You'll just see the Swarup Shakti. But the Swarup Shakti contains.
It's within.
Yes, it's within. Yeah. It's just like we're within the marginal potency. We may be manifest or not manifest, but we exist. Like that. You know, just like the material nature exists, whether it's manifest or not. Srila Prabhupada comments, various demigods beginning from Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and even Vishnu are supposed to be the creator, maintainer, and annihilator of this material world. But actually they are not. The fact is that everything is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, manifested in varieties of energies. Right? So Krishna expands as Vishnu. He expands as Brahma and Shiva to do. But so actually it's Krishna who's doing everything. Ekam eva dvitiyam brahma. There is no second existence. Right? So they'll take it that everything's impersonal. But no, it means there's no separate existence from Krishna. Right? So how he expands and everything, then that's the reality.
Well, can you explain this more? There is no second existence.
Means there's only Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And his and but because therefore the non-difference between him and his energies, but because they're non-different doesn't mean that they don't exist. Does that make sense? That the electricity and the generator, they go together, but the electricity is dependent on the generator. So there's no separate existence. You can't say that the electricity is one thing and the generator is another. No, the electricity is just a manifestation of the generator. No generator, no electricity. So all of his energies, they don't have a separate existence from him. They may be separated in that you can distinguish the different aspects and their interactions, but their existence is dependent on the Lord, because they're non-different from the Lord. So this is where the impersonalists, they can't catch this, because you have to have you have to understand the Lord to understand. So that only comes through devotion given by parampara. So because they don't have devotion, therefore they can't understand these things. Those who are truly vipassit, learned, are those who have reached the platform of understanding and observing the Supreme Personality of Godhead in any condition of life. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena shanta sadaiva hridayeshu vilokayanti. Brahma Samhita 5:38. Right, so now here's the problem, because we have in the here premanjana, we're seeing Krishna in everything. So that seeing him in everything, that's philosophy. But then that premanjana, then that's that nectar devotion stuff. You know, so we need to separate this. You know, this verse needs to be cut into pieces here. You know, learned devotee. So that's, you know, the two go together. Krishna, if there's only one existence, that means him and this is one. So these two are two aspects of himself. He is the supreme, but he is rasa. Right? So that's the thing. He's the Supreme Lord. He's one without a second. He's the Lord of all energies. And he is rasa. So these three together, that is Krishna. Okay. Learned devotees accept even conditions of distress as representing the presence of the Supreme Lord. When a devotee is in distress, he sees that the Lord has appeared as distress just to relieve or purify the devotee from the contamination of the material world. While one is within this material world, one is in various conditions, and therefore a devotee sees a condition of distress as but another feature of the Lord. Tattenukampam shushamikshamana. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:14-8. A devotee, therefore, regards distress as a great favor of the Lord, because he understands that he is being cleansed of contamination.
This point, we can be cleansed of contamination.
This is another point you would like separated off into a separate...
whatever. Because sometimes we see that distress is too much, and devotees instead...
You want it to be one much.
Three much.
Just be happy it's not three much, it's only too much.
And they cannot get over it, and it becomes their...
But that's attachment. So yes, it is a disturbance, it is causing a problem, and it is disturbing the devotional service, but is actually the distress causing it, or is their attachment to something else causing it?
Both. Because distress was the point that
started it, they aggregated it.
No. Attachment is what started it and aggregated it. You know? Okay. Let us say, okay, here. Yes? Yeah? So?
Buddhist philosophy. One more time, we didn't get it.
Okay. Didn't get it. Okay. So, did you have great anxiety and turmoil that was being crushed up?
No.
No. Why not?
No attachment.
That's the point. So, you only observe distress because there's attachment. If there's no attachment, you couldn't care less. We can... let us say, how comfortably do we sit there reading the newspaper and, you know, there's the headlines and there's that little side thing, you know, around the world and that, and we read down, okay, there was this earthquake and, you know, in Azerbaijan and 25,000 people died and this and that. Oh, wow, okay, wow, that's a lot. And then we move on to the next one. What happens if you were Azerbaijani and you happen to live there? Slightly different perspective. So that's the whole thing.
So, in our situation, when we are in distress, we
yes.
can push to ourselves till tomorrow that this is plenty
yes.
of condemnation.
Yes, because that's what's happening, is that we're attached to something, so then it's like something you're attached to, so much distress keeps coming up, you either adjust with that or give up dealing in that area. Right, so we either
slowly.
Adjust and adjust, yes, slowly, but we adjust with that, you know, or, you know, that we see it in connection to Krishna, which is the easiest, because then otherwise why are we dealing with that unless there's a nature there? And then the other is that if we don't see it, then we're going to, because we're looking at simply the external, then with time we see that this external always gives me trouble. Like every time you go to the ski resort, you come back, you know, in a Minerva cast. After a while, you start thinking, am I supposed to be doing this? You know, I mean, the first time, yeah, it was the skis, so we, you know, switched to, a boogie board and, you know, like that. But then after a while, we start to see maybe it's just being out on the snow. You know, does that make sense? So with time, but if we're not devotees, all we do is shift from one material desire to the next. But if we're devotees, then we start to see, well, maybe my attachment to skiing is the problem. Right? And then I'm not seeing that related to Krishna and all that. Well, if you're out there and you see the snow, the vastness, the whole experience is all Krishna, then it's not necessarily so much of a problem. But because we're still attached to that, you know, and that's why we're doing it, not because it pleases Krishna, that's why even that we're out there skiing, there still happens to be rocks, trees, and avalanches. And other people that have better equipment than we do. Yeah. And they let us know. Yeah. Is that so that's what we do, is that these are mentioned so that we can see how the distress representing the presence of the Supreme Lord. Okay, so Krishna is present there in a way that this distress will purify us of that material existence. So if we see it in that capacity, we actually get purified. If we don't, it just shifts it from one material contamination to the next. So for the devotees, then this distress is actually purifying. For the karmis, it's not. It might a little bit in piety, they move up a little bit, okay, they stop doing so much, you know, so much nonsense, but like you said, it'll take lifetimes. And then they'll move up in piety or, you know, like that. But it's not really a solution. But then for when Krishna is coming in this way, then the devotees seeing that, then they can appreciate and then they can advance in devotional service.
Last also mentioned that distress is superficial for the devotee.
But at the same time, if we're not on that level to neophytes, then we still...
Yes, but that's the point is... Yes, you want to come to the... In other words, if the devotee doesn't feel that distress, and we're feeling the distress, means then that just points out that we're still a sadhaka. So when we come to that platform, we won't have that anymore. So the more we advance, the less we have. Because it's like this. If you're so busy seeing Krishna and everything and absorbed in ecstasy, remembering Krishna and everything, why would the distress bother you? Why would it bother you? You don't care. You know what I'm saying? Let us say... the gopis, they're Krishna blows his flute, they're running towards Krishna, right? Some of them have their dupatta tied around their ankle. It's not that they've done some cool thing with it, it's just dragging out the back, right? You know, you have one earring on, you only have one eye, you put kajal, you know? You might have put your, you know, how you say... The sari on the top and the other one on the bottom, like this, you know, so, and then you're running out to see Krishna. So why doesn't it bother them? Because they're absorbed in Krishna, right? Now, if you were dressed like that and suddenly found yourself in the middle of Rodeo Drive, would you be in ecstasy? No. Yes, so that's the point. Is that because we're not absorbed in Krishna? So when you're absorbed in Krishna, these things don't bother you.
Would it be correct to say that if we're not absorbed in Krishna, we're like these material scientists who mix the organic and inorganic and
then yeah, you can say. But it's just a matter of what will be the specific conditioning we have. But we're just seeing the two. That's why we're saying mixed devotional service. Sadhaka means basically you start off with mixed devotional service. At some point you get to pure devotional service. But what we're shooting for is pure, unalloyed devotional service. Right? So while that mix is there, that will cause distress. When you come to pure devotional service, there won't be any distress, but it's not necessarily the absorption is on the level of prema. Does that make sense? It may be just the ruchi, asakti, bhava. But when it comes to prema, then you can say, now it's reached its maturity. So one is you're getting rid of the negative. The other is you're cultivating the positive. So we're doing both at once. So we might find some areas we already are not disturbed by and we're absorbed in Krishna. And other areas then we're still disturbed by. It just means those ones that are still disturbed, those are a little bit deeper, that's all. So it's just a matter of more time. But since it's the nature of the soul to be absorbed in Krishna, therefore it's still temporary. Right? It's just a matter of time before devotional service, you know, triumphs and Maya loses. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. That's why we see it's Vijaya Lakshmi. We don't say Vijaya Maya. Otherwise, we'd be in trouble. So Lakshmi, or devotional service, is what wins. Yeah. Devotee therefore regards distress as a great favor of the Lord because he understands that he is being cleansed of contamination. Tesham aham samudharta mrityu samsara sagarat. Bhagavad Gita 12:7. The appearance of distress is a negative process intended to give the devotee relief from the material world, which is called mrityu samsara, or the constant repetition of birth and death. To save a surrendered soul from repeated birth and death, the Lord purifies him of contamination by offering him a little distress. So when we say it's too much, be happy it's two, not three, four, you know. Wow, this is octomuch. You know, but, you know, yeah, no, it's only two. Yes.
Externally, it might appear that we change one kind of distress, means material distress, for the spiritual distress. Because it's, you know, from the Bhagavatam and Mahabharata, it appears that the devotee is always under some kind of the distress.
Okay, so you're taking that second, and you're not talking about Vipa Lumba or something here. Okay, just wanted to see which one you were talking about. like that. That doubt will come up later. Right?
Yeah.
that's Chaitanya Charitamrita doubt. I joined this movement to get rid of this stress. You know. Yeah. All these are all just because it's only a distress to us because it's an area of our value. If we don't value it, there's no distress. Does that make sense? So, therefore, if it's a distress for us, it just means it's within the in context of our value. But we're not getting all our distresses at once. So there's variety. It moves through the different ranges. So it's just it seems to move from one to the next. But these are just within the realm of our distress. You know, it's like, how you say? One guy, he's a mover, right? So he's delivering some furniture, and it's in this big box, and he's carrying it. And he's really suffering because it's so heavy, right? And he's grumbling. Next to him, there's this guy in this wheelchair. And this guy in the wheelchair is chastising him. You know, oh, if I was just so lucky that I could carry that, and I could be like that. You know, you don't know how lucky you are. And this. So that's the thing, is what we'll call one thing, we're considering this is bad, the other guy's considering that's good.
It's all relative.
It's all relative, right? So that's the thing, is that due to attachment, one thing bothers us and another thing doesn't. Or the same thing at one time does bother us and another time it doesn't. So it's all relative according to whatever we've applied a value on it. But if we just see it as engagement in Krishna's service, and to remember Krishna and to express that, then the situation may be seen from the ordinary point of view as a distressful, but because one's remembering Krishna and one's absorbed in Krishna, it's not actually a distress for the devotee. Because we're engaging in devotional, we choose situations and endeavors in which we can engage our nature in Krishna's service. So if it goes right, we'll consider that good, and if it doesn't go right, we'll consider it bad. But the point is to be engaged. So whether it's being engaged and we're remembering Krishna, or there's obstacles in remembering Krishna, actually the purpose has been achieved.
I don't get the last point.
Means, let us say, okay, I'm managing something. So I'm managing this to make it nice for Krishna. But there's obstacles, so it's not going that way. But I'm remembering Krishna and surrendering to Krishna. So actually the purpose of this engagement in Krishna's service still is there. So that's why we say there's no difference. Because that remembrance of Krishna works. And sometimes when there's distress, we tend to remember more.
Right. So can we say philosophically that our prayojana is already included in Abhideya?
Yes. That's
while we practice and then we get the experience,
yes.
And even if prayojana is different of what we expected, then in Abhideya we've achieved it already.
Yes. You could say is that would be a example of where it says that the name is the process, the name is the goal. You know, so bhakti is the process, bhakti is the goal. So it's that same thing, is that within Abhideya already is the prayojana, and within the prayojana is Abhideya. So it's there's a non-difference, the difference, that there's a difference in flavor, but it's actually the same thing. That will also answer the later doubt about, what do you call it? Yeah, vipalamba. Same thing, just different flavor. Absorption in Krishna, just that gives a different flavor. Because if you're together, then that will create more of an experience when you're apart. And by being apart, that will create more of an experience when you're together. So then that always has that. You know, it's just for us, it's focused on, it's more extreme. While the others, then it's not. There's that element that, you know, because he's the supreme, he's everything, he's everywhere, so they don't really feel that separation. But they do appreciate when they're with him personally and when they're not, but it's a very minimal. It doesn't affect them as it nourishes, but it doesn't come off as separation. Like that. So they just can't handle Because you have to remember, what's their position? Liberation. What's liberation? Being freed from the material energy. So that means it's a distress. So they want to be happy. So naturally it'll have that form. Well, the Braja Bhaktas, it's not about liberation. We're not interested in any of the five. Because it's about pleasing Krishna. So therefore, if it goes either way, it doesn't matter. Because for Krishna to be around and then be separate, it has two different flavors, it's all different flavors, so you can keep it going eternally. But if I only want, I don't want the distress part, then that lowers the intensity. So that brings it from you could say, high, upper Goloka or Gokul to lower Goloka. You know, or the aspect of what do you call it? Majesty. You know, so in Mathura and in Dwarka, it's not that there's not an element of sweetness, but the basis is majesty. Majesty with some sweetness. You understand? So it shifts, because it always has to be nice, always together. He's the Lord, you know, I'm a servant. So it takes on that aspect. Well, in Braj, then it can just be Krishna and his flavor, his enjoyment of this. So being with the devotee is so nice, that will make being separate even more nice. And having been separate, that'll mean being with devotees will be even more nice. So as far as rasa goes, it goes like that, but you have to be able to handle the intensity.
So for those who can handle the intensity, Vaikuntha is the place.
That's basically their interest.
Because there's no anxiety in there.
No. Also in lower Goloka, it means there's descriptions of, let's say, Nimbarka's Vrindavan. There's no separation.
Yeah.
So it has all the sweetness. So it's sweetness without separation.
Yeah.
So you can say it's just not magic, but it doesn't have that, so the intensity is not that great. So it's actually a lower level of Vrindavan. It doesn't have that opulence of some of the aspects, like those who are Vaikuntha Bhaktas who worship Krishna and may be interested in Vrindavan Rasa, like Undal and others like that. So it's just Vrindavan for them, but that'll be, that aspect is Vrindavan with opulence.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still the Vrindavan pastimes.
Yeah.
But, you know, you go, Radha goes to the Rasa dance in a swan airplane with 10 million maidservants. Does that make sense? You know, while in Braj, she walks with 5,000 to 6,000. You know. Does that make sense? Like the Indian, so much only. 10 lakhs only. Yeah. So only 5,000 to 6,000 instead of 10 million. But they walk, they don't go in a swan airplane. So you have that aspect of, it's Vrindavan pastime, so that aspect of the sweetness, but it's done in that aspect of, it has that majesty to it. Well, the Nimbarkas, there's not majesty, but you know, it's sweetness, but at the same time it doesn't accept that full aspect of that intensity, of that personal. Because there's like, because separation means Krishna's appreciating that. But if we don't appreciate separation, it's because we don't like it. In a sense, so that it still has that touch. It's the top, you could say, of that realm. So if you're taking the aspect of, you know, that between majesty and sweetness, that will be the, you know, at the juncture between them. It'll be on that side, but it's right at the, you know, because it's still about us. It's connected to Krishna, we're fully absorbed. But it still has that aspect that they can't handle that intensity. So that's the difference between pure and pure unalloyed. So all the others are pure, that it's just about Krishna. But it doesn't, and so even though that may be considerations about themselves, they want to be on the same planet, or they want to be an associate, or they want to have the same form, or the same opulence, but it's still all connected to Krishna, and they remember Krishna at every moment. So therefore, it's pure devotional service. Because what they're asking for, we say, is material. It's not material, it's spiritual. But pure unalloyed means you're not even asking for anything spiritual. for satisfaction. You're simply asking to be engaged as a servant of the servant of the servant.
Maharaj, and Vaikuntha is like they like more comfort in the majesty. They don't want to go into penances, maybe, or they don't.
No, I wouldn't take it that far. I wouldn't put it into the external. All it is just the particular intensity that is there. There in Vaikuntha, it's a taste. We're only showing in comparison, because the point is they're pleasing the Lord because He has that form of Vishnu, and these are His associates to go along with that, because He's only manifesting part of His personality, then these are the devotees that match that particular part. While Krishna being the complete, then His devotees match that. So it's a different kind of, you'd use a different approach to that. Is that? Okay.
I'm just thinking that we all, on the path and develop, and then but then we start all together, but then people, stay at the different stations.
Yes.
But some continue. So, but
it's... So if you're satisfied, then that's the position you're supposed to be at. If you're not, just means it's time before it moves on.
Because highest is what's given, but who's taking it, that's the question.
Well, that you see with time. That's why there's Gokul, so you get trained. Because you can get up to a particular point. You remember Krishna at the time of death, then that will take you to Gokul. Then you'll be there. But depending upon where you were as a neophyte, as a Madhyama and Uttama, you'll start at that level of understanding or attachment to Krishna. But you don't have anything material getting in your way. Right? So therefore, that exposure then will go very quickly. So if the exposure is more, then you'll take up the association of the eternal associates. That's why they come there. And if not, then you won't. And so then only when everybody else goes, or everybody else takes part, and you can't, then that's when then your attachment to Krishna increases, and then it burns up anything that's getting in the way, any anartas that are there. Then you're qualified to go and associate. Then by associating, then you see how the associates deal. Then you develop that kind of love. That brings you then to inheritance, which then you come to the platform of prema. Right. So in other words, when you go to Gokul, it's called Sarup Siddhi. But when you come to that platform of prema, that's Vastu Siddhi. So if you've come to Vastu City here, then you go straight to Golok, because you already did the pastimes in Golok through meditation. That's very rare. It can be done, but it's rare. But if not, whatever position you're at here, you'll go there, and in Sarup Siddhi, then you'll come to that platform of Vastu City. Then you'll go to Golok. But once you're in Golok, you don't see any difference between the two places, because they're the same place. It's like if you have a house and it's upstairs and downstairs, it's one house, it's just your house. You see guests downstairs, they're not upstairs. So, there's demons, there's husbands, there's that, downstairs. So you want to deal with them, you go downstairs to deal. And when you're upstairs, you don't have to deal. But it's one house. We see it as two different things, but it's actually one thing. Okay.
Maharaj, there's this pastime about these sages, and they were doing yagya, they were worshipping Krishna and doing yagyas and stuff, and these demons came and they made all this stool and stuff and go on the yagya, and they kept doing it, and then they called, who did they call?
Balaram, if you're talking about Krishna book, Balaram came. I think that was Balvala, was the demon.
Yeah.
And so then he caught him and killed him.
Yeah.
And then the problem's there. But in Ram's pastimes, then Vishwamitra was performing the yagyas, and then they called Ram.
Yeah, I think Balaram. Yeah,
like that. But in any case, these things go on.
Yeah, but my point is that why,
you're saying that in any circumstance, you know, it's favorable because you're remembering Krishna. So
yes.
Why did they bother to call somebody? Why didn't they just go, oh, we're going through difficulties?
Because their duty is to make the nicest results for Krishna.
So same with us. Our duty is to make nice results.
But it doesn't mean we're any less Krishna conscious.
So why bother stopping the obstacle if it's making more Krishna conscious?
Then how do you get a good result for Krishna?
Well, you're remembering Krishna, so that result is good enough.
But why you wouldn't want to improve it? Radharani cooks for Krishna. She doesn't cook the same thing twice.
Mm-hmm.
So he was happy with what she cooked yesterday. So why does she just cook the same thing today? He's a guy.
She's not.
Oh, you think because she has to take the remnants and so, okay. And then all the friends, they all have to eat also. Okay, so she can't cook the same thing like that. So for Krishna, it's good. Oh, okay. So the bhakti's for Krishna and what she's cooked is for everybody else. Okay.
Contemporary view.
Yes.
No, like what I'm saying is that the sages
are distressed. I know what you're saying, but the point is try to catch what we're saying here, what Prabhupada's saying. Is you're trying your best because you're taking that, oh, if I can't do the best, then why try at all? Because that's the underlying thing. No, as you're always trying, there's always going to be obstacles. But in any case, whether in trying you're successful, you're trying there's obstacles, you're always Krishna conscious. So for the devotee, they're always absorbed in Krishna. So in that way, because otherwise you'll say, oh, this is bad because you can't do anything. No, but you're remembering Krishna. But because you want to get a good result for Krishna, therefore you're endeavoring to try to improve it. Otherwise, what's the point of pastime? See, Krishna and everybody could all sit around and just meditate and all just, you know, they're just remembering. It's just, it's all there, you know. But Krishna is doing that as Atmarama, but he expands so that there's, you know, obstacles and things to get done.
So when we're doing service and some obstacle comes, it's part of the lila?
It's part of the, yes.
Okay.
And your business is to make it better and to not lament and therefore give up the service because it's a problem.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Therefore, you endeavor for two potatoes.
Well, I was thinking there should at least be sweet potatoes. That would be okay.
No, two. One salty, one sweet. You have to get a variety. The appearance of distress is a negative process intended to give the devotee relief from this material world, which is called mrityu samsara. That's right. So we want relief from the material world, but we're getting it because of the distress. Because if everything was fabulous, would we have necessarily joined Krishna consciousness? Right? Means everything that you wish would happen, if it was actually all happening and consistent and never not happening, would we have joined Krishna consciousness?
No.
A resounding no. Okay.
But so, we still joined. So now that, we want everything to be consistent.
Nah, yeah. We joined to get all that consistently, yes. Okay, yes. Someone who knows what they want, yes, okay. In a sense, so that's the whole point, is it helps us get beyond. That's the point. Or the constant repetition of birth and death, right? Mrityu samsara. To save a surrendered soul from repeated birth and death, the Lord purifies him of contamination by offering him a little distress. So that's the point. It's only a little compared to what it should be. So if we think this is too much, imagine what it should have been. Right? Just to give the proportion. If Prabhupada says you should have had your arm cut off and you only got a little cut on the end of your finger. So imagine what is happening to you, and you multiply that by what it could have been. You know, so instead of too much, it would be like 100 much. You know, or make it 108 much. You know, make it auspicious.
Only,
yes, only, yes. Okay. Yes, so it's always less. So then, when it's just very, very mild, hardly anything that doesn't bother you, imagine what it would have been if. You know, so. To save us, this cannot be understood by a non-devotee, but a devotee can see this because he is vipaschit, or learned. A non-devotee, therefore, is perturbed and distressed, but a devotee welcomes distress as another feature of the Lord. Sarvam kalvidam brahma, right? It's another feature of the Lord. Everything is the Lord. That's the whole point. So when we say the sarvam kalvidam brahma, means everything's the Lord, mean he's present in everything. You can find him, the person, in everything. He's there through his energies and all that, but where did the energies come from? From Krishna. So it's external energy. But where did that come from? Right? That's the transformation, the internal. Where does that come from? Krishna. So in other words, Krishna is represented in everything. Right? That's the sarvam kalvidam brahma. Yes.
Can I go back to the beginning of the text? For example, you said Krishna is unequal and all these things. I just said this one because there is a group here of
the efficient cause.
Yeah, there is a group of people here who consider that there is a contradiction in our philosophy because Krishna says in the Gita that he's the unborn. And then, but we celebrate his appearance as like a born person. And then they say, because this was a debate with the Brahma Kumaris and some of us a long time back, and they said that Shiva possessed Krishna and the Kurukshetra battle and spoke about himself. But they say because then it's a contradiction because Krishna is the unborn and then he is born. There is a Janmashtami celebration. Replying them that being the absolute, although he declares he's the unborn, what would be the best way to talk, to present in this way?
Well, it's just a pastime.
Yeah, we say it's a pastime, but in a...
But I mean, if they're saying Shiva came like that, that's a pastime. So if they can accept Shiva's on the battlefield, then why can't they accept Krishna's there? You know what I'm saying? The point is you can't accept what you want in pastime and what you don't want is not pastime. So the point is it's pastime. Because we see here from Devaki, that's why he went from Vasudeva's mind, or his heart, to Devaki's heart. That's how he was born. It doesn't say he was in the womb or this or that, or it just says he was in the heart. Because of that, then everything is manifest. So that's why those details are given in the pastime, so that we don't make that mistake. He's not born like an ordinary living entity. He was born with four arms. Right? You know, so what does that mean? Club, disc, what do you call it? Lotus, conch. Right, any one of those is going to be a problem to give birth to. Right?
Except for lotus.
That won't be so bad, yeah. But may not be so fresh.
Maharaj, another point if you want to explain, because this topic...
Yeah, you understand? So he's there. And how big is he? Right? You know, he's not this little dinky little baby. You know, he's this big, you know, full-size... The Supreme Lord. So the Supreme Lord, they work in pradeshas of 10. Humans work in 9. So that means even just in proportion, he'll be bigger than your standard humans. That's why he's not in his human form. He's in his supreme, in godlike form. It's a different proportion. Human form means then in proportion with humans. So all of these things, how would he be born? So that's contradictory to say, no, he has to be born by the mundane method. No, he's coming from the heart, so it's not a matter. He is everything, so he wants to manifest so you can see him or not. It means he is everything, we can't see him. So he manifesting himself so you can see him, that's his own free will. So he's not born. So we're celebrating when he comes in a position that we can see him and appreciate his pastimes. Otherwise, his pastimes are always going on, but we can't see them. And so because we can't see them, we can't get the benefit. So when he comes, manifests his pastimes, then those are documented by the acharyas so that we can then hear about them, then that's a glorious moment. So is that? So that would be.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaurav Vrindavan ki.